Argument Hirschberg versus CFTC, Mr. Stratton.
May it please the court, this court should reverse the CFTC's denial of Mr. Hirschberg's registration to be a floor broker on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange because that denial violates the Pardon Clause and the Due Process Clause of the United States Constitution. The U.S. Supreme Court and this court have interpreted the Pardon Clause to mean that a pardon eliminates all collateral consequences or punishment as a result of a pardoned conviction. In this case, a collateral punishment includes depriving an individual of a civil right, including the right to work in a chosen profession, which is the effect that it's had.
All the modern cases are contrary to that. Are you just relying on Garland?
No, Your Honor. This court in the Bjurken case, which is 1975, which does cite Garland and some of the other cases, do draw a distinction between a pardon eliminating guilt or eliminating the fact of the conviction, but they all affirm the proposition that the pardon eliminates the punishment for the conviction that has been pardoned. And that's what we're relying on in Garland and in Bjurken and all the other cases. And that's what's happened in this case.
Very indirectly, because the basis of the commission's ruling is that Hirschberg's registration had been suspended.
It's indirect in the sense that it's one step removed. His registration had been revoked in 1995. When he reapplied in 2001, the decision was, we are denying you re-registration because of a prior revocation. But because the prior revocation had been based solely on the fact of his prior conviction, it is using that prior conviction.
They looked at more than that. They looked at the conduct underlying the conviction.
They looked at the conduct once they got to the fitness hearing. Our position is they should never have gotten to the fitness hearing because the only way they get there is to use the prior conviction to say there is a statutory disqualification, which then kicks the process into a fitness hearing and requires Mr. Hirschberg to sustain the burden of proof by clear and convincing evidence. So if they do not use the pardon to conviction in the first instance, they don't get to the second step, which is where
kind of like the fruit of the poison tree is what you're talking about.
It is akin to that, Your Honor.
Yeah, So we have to buy the argument that they cannot look beyond the pardon to look into the qualifications of the applicant on ethical standards.
Not on this record, Your Honor.
We can't draw it. You can't write a one-way ticket for this. We're going to have to write something that will reverberate for the FTC. I mean the
CFTC.
The FTC.
Yes.
So I have to say that once a pardon has been entered for conduct by an applicant, they cannot inquire into it.
They cannot use the fact of the conviction that was pardoned as a basis for a disqualification.
Well, the fact of the conviction is what they can't look to the underlying things behind the original conviction.
It is conceivable that they could look at the underlying conduct.
Well, how could we draft it then? How would you propose drafting such an order? That only in this case, or you know,
I don't think they have a statutory ground for looking at the underlying conduct because the statute sets out various bases for a disqualification. The one that the CFTC relied on in this case was the fact of the prior revocation, which was based on the conviction. If the CFTC,
but they're looking at the prior revocation and the underlying fact other than the conviction, what under what conviction itself, that is the facts that led to the conviction.
That's right.
And they can't do that on your theory.
I don't believe they can, Your Honor.
Well, now we're back to my original question. Is that an absolute that once a pardon is entered, they cannot look to the underlying conduct behind the original conviction because it's been pardoned in their study of whether or not they should give them a right to be a floor trader?
The only exception I can see to that, based on this statute, is there is a subsection of the statute that gives the commission the right to disqualify based on other good cause.
Is that just a general term, other good cause, like the old 95th article of war, any other thing you do that we don't like?
In fact, the CFTC in this case has interpreted it, and that interpretation is set out in the government's brief.
Would that prevent them to go then to the underlying conduct behind the original conviction for which there has been a pardon?
In this case, no. Because
we're chasing our tail around a flagpole. How do we distinguish this case from all other cases?
I think in this case, the fact that there has been a pardon does prevent...
Well, I started with my premise. Every time there's a pardon, you can't go into it. You said, not in this case, I want to know how does it apply to any other case.
I wish I could say that I know how this would apply in every other case.
So do I.
But in this case, the fact that he has been pardoned bars them from going back.
Well, suppose you had a person who was convicted of pedophilia, and then he's pardoned. Does this mean elementary school could not refuse to hire him as a teacher on the basis of his having been convicted of pedophilia?
I don't think it would, Your Honor. The difference in this case is that the CFTC has set out very specific bases for disqualification, and as you go through that list and try to find one that would apply...
It sounds very similar. I mean, a person commits fraud, convicted, then he's pardoned. Now he wants to go to work in a business which is rife with fraud. I think you'd think it'd be natural to keep him out.
I don't believe that the statute is written with the precision that the CFTC would like that would allow that result, because...
It's broadly written, which is what they really want. They don't want precision. They want broad statutory language. They seem to have broad statutory language.
They do have broad statutory language in the sense that they...
Prior registration of such person in any capacity has been suspended. That becomes a ground for, you know, refusing to allow him to register.
The exception, which is this case, is where that revocation is based on a prior conviction.
But that's like my pedophilia case. I mean, it's one thing to say, I thought, my understanding of pardons, the pardon wipes out the punishment. Can't be punished anymore. But it doesn't wipe out the conviction. The conviction stands. In fact, to get a pardon, you acknowledge your guilt. And that acknowledgement then becomes a basis for various disabilities.
But one of the
otherwise, no one would ever be pardoned. If the pardon means you pretend nothing happens and you really, the person can continue to prey on the public, whatever conduct led him to be convicted in the first place.
It's not as broad as that, Your Honor, because on a re-registration, they can impose conditions, they can provide supervision, they can even restrict him from trading except on his own account. All of those things have been done in the past in Mr. Hirschberg's case, so it's not as broad as that. What we are asking is that the CFTC not punish Mr. Hirschberg by preventing him from going back to work based on a prior conviction, on the fact of the prior conviction.
It's not punishing him. It's trying to protect the public from him.
Well, it certainly...
In my pedophilia case, which you agreed was one where the elementary school could refuse to employ this person.
But that's...
But you acknowledge that.
I did acknowledge that, but that's in the... It's in a context where the elementary school was not constrained by statutory provisions that said we can only disqualify on the following grounds. In this case, one of those grounds, one step removed, is the prior conviction. So once that conviction...
But an explicit ground is the prior suspension. So the language of the statute certainly supports the commission's position.
That's correct, except that at that point in time, the record is frozen, and if you go back and look at what the basis for the prior revocation was, it's the conviction. And so there's no way for the commission at that point to use that as a basis without one step removed punishing him for the prior conviction.
But that's exactly the same as the pedophilia case. They use the conviction as the basis for saying you can't teach elementary school.
But that assumes that they can look at the underlying conduct and say...
I think they can just use the fact of conviction.
Well, that's what I think the cases teach, is that you cannot use the fact of the conviction to punish someone after that conviction has been pardoned. And if the statute is different, for example, in the attorney registration provisions where you can look at character, then that produces a different result. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Stratton. Mr. White?
May it please the court. I think the cases, and in particular this court's decision in Grossgold, make it clear that the licensing agency can consider the conviction for a limited purpose and subject to one important constraint. And the court can consider the conviction for the informational purpose of establishing the existence of the conduct, and I guess also for establishing the legislature's judgment of the conduct. In Grossgold, the court talks about the moral turpitude inherent in the factual predicate supporting the mail fraud conviction of the lawyer in that case. So this court said, in effect, you can look at the conviction for purposes of reasoning backwards to the fact that A, the applicant did something, and B, the something he did falls into a certain category of behavior that the legislature has decided, well, in that case, a crime of moral turpitude, in this case, fraud. The constraint on using this information is that it does have to be for a legitimate licensing purpose, not, quote, punishment, unquote. Okay, how do you tell the difference? And I think there are a couple of ways that are relevant in this case. First, you look at the category of conduct that was involved in the underlying crime, and you say, is this relevant to the purpose of licensure in this case, as Judge Posner's examples, I think, are designed to get at that, and I think that's quite clearly the case here. A second standard discussed in the footnote in Jerkin and repeated in the Grossgold case is, does the licensing agency take into account conduct of this category only in the context of a criminal conviction, or does it also take into account this sort of conduct without a criminal conviction? And the answer, if you look at the statute as a whole, by statute I mean Section 8A of the Commodity Exchange Act, the answer is sure, there are all kinds of ways in which fraud can be considered in this registration process without a criminal conviction. And then there's a finally, if you look at the actual process that applied to Mr. Hirschberg, you find that in addition, that while the conviction pursuant to the statutory standard created a presumption of disqualification, he had the opportunity to show that, in fact, he was not or was no longer a danger if he were registered as a broker, and had the opportunity to present additional information. So the fact that that inquiry was available further shows that there was a legitimate purpose to considering this information. I'll hit briefly two secondary issues, points made on the pardon issue by Mr. Hirschberg. One, they assert that there's a violation of Mr. Hirschberg's rights in the very fact that there's a shift in the burden of proof. But I think that assumes what needs to be proved. Since the government can properly use the conviction for informational purposes under the standards used in Illinois, fact of the conviction or what you infer from the conviction could be was conclusive evidence of the crime and was could be grounds for disbarment by itself. It's sort of a fortiori. You can use it to shift the burden of proof, again, assuming it serves a reasonable regulatory purpose, which it clearly does here. A further secondary argument made by Mr. Hirschberg is the assertion that, based on the Supreme Court Burdick case from 1915, that by accepting the pardon, he admitted his guilt, and that the National Futures Association and then the commission should have paid more attention to this in evaluating whether he has been rehabilitated. And I have two things to say about that. First, that is not an argument, to the best of my knowledge, that was made below or even in his principal brief. And second, there's a difference between saying that an action, in this case accepting the pardon, amounts to an admission of something as a matter of law. There's a difference between that and making the evaluation of whether Mr. Hirschberg in fact recognized that he had done something wrong and that he needs to do something about this in the future, which was the ultimate basis for the decision here. The second argument made by Mr. Hirschberg is a statutory argument that the 10-year time period for Section 8A2D needs to be imported into a Section 8A2A case, and the short answer to that is that it's simply unsupported by the statutory language. And in fact, the statutory approach is reasonable. It's reasonable for Congress to make a bright-line rule that if somebody has had their license revoked in the past and they come and apply again, that person should not be treated like a man off the street, but instead has a shift of the burden of proof simply by virtue of the fact of the revocation. In addition, in prior revocation proceedings, even under 8A2D involving convictions, the information that is considered is not necessarily restricted to the conviction itself, since the NFA or the CFTC may well consider subsequent evidence on the issue of rehabilitation or what have you. And in fact, in Mr. Hirschberg's case, his original revocation was based in part on information subsequent to the conviction and not merely on information from the time of the conviction. So there's really no justification for deviating from the plain language of the statute here.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. White. Mr. Stratton, how much time does he have? No time? Well, we'll give you a minute to rebut. Like a minute?
Two brief points, Your Honor. The Grossgold case in Illinois was an attorney registration and disciplinary case. There, the rules of the court allow for discipline based on the conduct. That's the wording of the rule. Here, they were punishing him based on the fact of the conviction, not the underlying conduct. On the issue of contrition, there is contrition implicit in the acceptance of the pardon. By not crediting that, he is not getting the full benefit of the pardon, and that's what violates the pardon clause, is that he's entitled to get the full benefit of it. The agency did not give that to him. And finally, whether it is punishment based on what the agency's intention is can't be controlling. It's punishment to Mr. Hirschberg that he's not allowed to work in his chosen profession. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stratton and Mr. White. Next case for argument is Wester.